pleased to be joined in studio by Joseph Newgarden. Joseph, first of all, congratulations on the win. When you pit, you come out, the race goes under caution, and you realize that, okay, this is played into your hands. How do you avoid at that point, you know, maintaining your focus? In other words, because that things have fallen, have gone your way. Now you're back out on the track. How do you avoid losing focus at that point?
Well, I was more so worried about the rain. You know, there was like spitting raindrops coming out of turn seven for multiple laps. And, you know, that was the biggest thing that could throw a wrench in the works after you inherit the lead. You know, we were good up to that point. We were sitting fourth on the first stint. So we were sitting pretty good. And when we pitted, we were going to pit regardless. The yellow just happened to come out perfectly for us. So it took away, you know, the need for us to get those three positions. It just kind of granted it to us because the top three guys didn't pit. And when that happens, you know, you normally feel pretty good on a street circuit because track position is king. Mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult to get by another fast car. Now, you know, if guys are struggling or they're on a different tire compound, then you can definitely make passes and make moves and get to the front. But once you're at that knife edge of, the top end of the grid, it's difficult to make positions. So, you know, from then I was like, man, we've got an opportunity to win this race now. We just got to hold on to it and hopefully be a little bit better than everyone behind us.
Do you change how you drive at that point?
No.
Do you drive differently when you're leading than when you're chasing, I guess,
You shouldn't. You really shouldn't. You know, the moment that you take it easy in a race car is the moment you're probably going to wreck. There's one time that I had a huge lead in an Indy Lights race back in 2011, and it was on a street circuit, and I was like, you know, I'm doing pretty good here. Maybe I should just, you know, cruise a little bit and take it easier. And I messed up my braking into a corner and stuffed it into a wall. And it was because I was taking it easy. So I think whenever you lose your focus from trying to maximize whatever you're doing, or you try and back off, sometimes it can bite you. You know, and I'm not saying you have to be 100% like, you know, flat out doing as much as you can to be as fast as possible. But, you know, as soon as you try and take it too easy, I think it can turn the other way and bite you pretty quick.
You talked about the spitting rain in turn seven. How much of an issue when you're, because I think sometimes we underestimate, you know, we talk about the changing conditions, sometimes think of the changing road conditions because it can be slick, it can be rainy, and tires, all that stuff. But when you're in a track that is sort of the way the lakeshore is, where you can literally have three or four different weather events occurring, as not just as the race goes on, but as you're going on along the track, how do you adjust to that as a driver? You know, wet to dry on the same lap, essentially.
It's tough. I mean, it's a variable. You know, the biggest concern for me was it was going to start raining in the final corner when I'm in it. And I wasn't going to have an opportunity to dive into the pits, and then I was going to have to go a whole lap to get back around, and someone else was going to pit. That was my concern. But yeah, you can have races like that where it's raining on, you know, a couple corners of the track and elsewhere it's dry. And, you know, that's just about managing what's going on. I mean, it's not as complicated as it sounds. It's just, look, you've got to get through those zones. That creates a very odd situation, though, because you're probably going to put on wet tires at that point. And so the tires are going to, you know, work well for you in the corners that are wet, and they're going to stay cool. But wet tires are only designed for wet conditions. So once you go to the dry portion of the track, you're going to be heating those things up, degrading them. They're going to start peeling apart. So it provides a very interesting situation. It doesn't happen often, but there's been a couple times when it has happened, and you just got to try and be better than anyone else at managing the tires, because like I said, when you get to the dry part, they just break apart and completely go away from you.
What is it about this track that seems to suit you? Or maybe I'll rephrase that. What is it about you as a driver that seems to suit this track?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I've always definitely...
course, I'm sorry.
I've had a little bit of fortune here, for sure. You know, when in 15 we caught a good yellow, and we were good, but we weren't as good as we were this year. This year I think we could have won for sure on merit. I think we had the pace to do that. We were quickest in the warm-up in the morning. I thought we had the quickest race car all weekend. We didn't qualify as well as we wanted to, but again, you know, we caught a little bit of that break. Instead of, you know, having to work from fourth to first, that yellow helped us just get the lead. So I don't know what it is about Toronto. I don't know if we paid someone off here in this city, but the yellows keep, you know, falling our way here. So I have no idea what that magic is coming from.
When you talk about the car being fast enough and feeling fast, in addition to just the actual speed of the car, which tells you whether or not it's fast, what makes you feel that you have the pace to win? Because, you know, it doesn't matter the race. You'll hear a driver say, we had the pace to win that. And my sense is it's a little more than simply the numbers on the speedometer, right? It's a little more than that. Or is it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the biggest indicator is what's your pace over a tire stint. You know, in practice, you get a pretty good idea of who's good on new tires, who's good on the alternate tires, which is your softer compound mm-hmm. for qualifying. And those are the tires you have to be really good on to qualify for pole. But then you have the primary tire, which is the harder compound, more durable, more of the race tire. And, you know, you can see pretty early on in practice, if you have a car that's, you know, just good throughout the entire stint of the tire, and it doesn't seem to drop off, seems to take care of it, you seem to just be faster than everybody with you know, half worn out tires, then you feel like, hey, we got a good race car and we could probably do something with people deep into the stints of the race. So that's kind of where I get my indicator from early in the weekend, is, you know, especially warm up too. When you mm-hmm. you run warm up, everyone's running full fuel, they're normally running old tires, so they're trying to figure out their race pace. And if you're leading the warm up, you normally feel pretty good about it. So those are kind of indicators you look at. So if you're not necessarily the quickest qualifying car, you hope you have the quickest race car, because that's when it's going to count.
What is the key to having success on this circuit, do you think?
Oh, I think, you know, Toronto's probably one of the few places where you have a lot of variables. You know, the yellows seem to play more in effect to the race here than anywhere else. I don't know why. You know, it just seems like Toronto, it throws a monkey wrench into everyone's day somehow, some way, with a yellow coming out. So you've got to plan for that, and the way that you can do that is pitting early. Mm-hmm. You know, the guys that pit early, it kind of safeguards it, because in IndyCar, we close the pits when it goes yellow. So it actually penalizes the people that haven't pitted. Right. We do that for safety reasons. You know, someone's wrecked into a wall, we're not going to have people racing around to get back to the pits. So, you know, those are the type of things you can do to safeguard against the yellows. But then on top of that, Toronto is the one street circuit that we go to that has the most surface changes out of anywhere. I mean, you'll have, you know, asphalt on the entry to the corner, then it'll change to concrete, and then it'll change to some mix of you don't even know what the heck on the exit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just some...
Yeah, we deal with that every day.
Some crazy mix of concrete and asphalt. So you have to deal with that every corner, and trying to figure out the balance of the race car. That's kind of the trick of Toronto, is, you know, how do you get the balance for all these different surfaces? And the person that does that the best, you know, makes a very fast race car.
Do you prefer street circuits?
You know, I don't prefer one or the other. You know, I grew up with a road racing background. I started in go-karts, like mm-hmm. a lot of young Canadian drivers, like James Hinchcliffe, very similar to what he would have grown up doing. And you race on road courses. That's, you know, our primary form of driving, and that's what you figure out, you know, learning to do as a kid. Mm-hmm. But then in IndyCar, you learn about street course racing. You know, you close off these streets, and you've got walls and surfaces, like I'm talking about, that permanent road courses, they don't have that. It's just mm-hmm. a nice, smooth asphalt surface. Then you also got to race on ovals, right? And there's all different types, super speedways, short ovals. So the thing that I love about IndyCar is it gives you that challenge that, look, if you're only good at one of these types of circuits, you're not going to be the champion at the end of the day. You're not going to be the most complete driver. So you have to like everything. Mm-hmm. You got to be good at everything. You got to be good at going back and forth. You know, we're going to go to a road course now after this, which is totally different than Toronto. And after that, we'll go to an oval again. So it's all about keeping on page with how do you have to drive at these different circuits, how do you have to set the car up at different circuits, and you do that back and forth all year. So I love that about IndyCar. I think it's the best part of it.
Now, I know that you guys have a weekend off after this. We talked a little bit about this off air, but what would your schedule be like on a week where you didn't have the weekend off? Let's say we're racing next weekend. What would your schedule be normally, and how will this week change from that?
Well, it always depends. You know, it's always fluctuating. We have simulators nowadays because we're so limited on what we can actually do on track testing wise. Mm-hmm. We can't just go to racetracks and test when we want. There's regulations by the series that tries to create parity, you know, so that, you know, we control costs. We don't have people just testing all the time. So we have to go in these simulators that the manufacturers create. We, you know, we're a Chevrolet team, so Chevy has an awesome simulator, kind of like a flight simulator. If you think mm-hmm. about pilots training to fly airplanes, very similar to what we get inside to drive race cars virtually. And so we'll work with the engineers to make the race cars better for each track and find better suspension packages, better packages in general for the setup. So we'll do a lot of that sometimes. You know, maybe you're on a media tour somewhere. You might be in a sponsor appearance one day out of the week. But most of the time when I'm home, I'm just in the shop every day. I go in, I do my training physically in the morning, and then I basically just catch up with the engineers. I walk around the shop, see what everyone's doing, see what new is going to be put on the race car, what we're doing at the next event. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to just stay engaged with the team, and, you know, I'm pretty low key. That's normally my day to day, is just going into the shop.
How much will you work out physically work out during the season? How do you find the balance between that and being in the car?
It's hard to improve your physical. The way it works, you can't improve your physical fitness through the year,
right.
You know, when the season is going on. You just kind of have to maintain it. So what we try and do, at least, you know, from what I try and do, I know a lot of drivers try and do this. You try and improve your physical fitness level. So you want to have good muscular endurance inside the cars because they're animals to drive. There's mm-hmm. no power steering, no power brakes. You're pulling 5 G's through the right. corners and under braking. So you really have to hold on to these things. And so your muscular endurance, upper body strength is really important. Your cardiovascular fitness is important. So we try and like accelerate that program in the off season and improve it as much as possible, you know, get as fit as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the year, it's just about maintaining it.
Right.
You're not going to really improve it. You're traveling too much. Your diet's not as good. You know, there's too many variables during the season when you're busy. So you just try and get in and maintain that fitness level, not improve it, but just to maintain it.
Now, I know that, as we said, after your win, you took, I thought, a very lighthearted shot at James Hinchcliffe. I'm led to believe that he may have led you astray last night as well after the race, which is probably not terribly surprising.
You know, Hinch will try and get you lost in Toronto whenever he has the opportunity. But I tell James, I love beating him in his city. This is his town, mm-hmm. you know, and he's become such a great representative for IndyCar racing. And I think, you know, for his community here in Toronto. And he's an awesome guy to have within the series, a great friend too. But I, you know, whenever I can get a jab at James, you know, winning in his city, it always feels good. So mm-hmm. he's joking with me now. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee in the States, and he wants to promote a race in Nashville and go there and beat me in my city. So I don't know if that's going to ever happen, but we love coming up here, you know, and whenever I get to beat Hinch, I always like it too.
How many drivers actually have a home track advantage? Is there such a thing as that? Because in James's case, again, you know, that course can change just based on the road work. It's going to be different from one year to the next. But is there such a thing as a home track advantage for drivers? And is there anybody in IndyCar who has that home track advantage?
I think it's a psychological thing. If you believe you have a home track advantage, you probably do. You know, if you believe it works for you, then, you know, some drivers, they feed off the energy of, hey, this is my city, these are my people, and it spurs them on to have a better weekend. You know, but I think if you're a driver that doesn't look at it that way, then probably not. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never really experienced it because IndyCar used to race in Nashville and they don't race there anymore.
Right.
And they haven't raced there since I joined the series. So I have no idea how I would react to a hometown crowd, but I don't know. I'm not normally the one that tries to play into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know about Hinch. I mean, I feel like Hinch always performs well here. So I have no idea if that's just the energy that he feeds off with, you know, being in town with his city and his people. I think for some people, there's something to it for sure.
How's the rest of the season set up for you, do you think, right now?
It's going to be tight to the finish. You know, we have five. So in IndyCar, we have 5 races left.
Right.
Till we, you know, close the year out. And it's very close. The top 5 are very close in points. So they're pretty much spread by 50 points. And to win a race is 52 points. So it's not a big spread. You know, we're sitting 4th and we're 20 points out. You know, so that's, you know, less than half points for a win. So you win a race, you know, you're right in the mix still. And we're very much in it. So for these last 5 races, it's pretty much all about who's most consistent. You know, you don't have to win every race, but you got to make sure you're not having 21st place finishes
right.
where you're wrecking out. The guy that has a couple of those, he's not going to be in contention at the end of the day. So whoever's the most consistent over these last 5 races, I think is going to be the champion. But there's going to be 5 guys vying for it, and they're not going to be easy to beat.
It would seem to me that it would be hard to kind of walk that balance, because as a driver, I would think there'd be a certain amount of, you know, there's an aggressive nature you need to win that race. It seems to me it's not necessarily the one sport where you can go in and say, okay, all I got to do now is finish 4th, 5th, or 6th in this race. And then if I get 2nd, the next one, I mean, you're trying to win in that particular day. But how do you find that balance? Is there a point where you will decide in a race, okay, I'm not going to finish 1st today. I've got to try to creep up a little bit, get some points, get the car around the track without crashing it.
Yeah. No, actually, exactly what you just said at the end. You know, I think it's a little bit like when you're leading the race. We were talking about that. You know, not letting off. You know, not letting off your pace. Not trying to slow down too much, because then something can happen. You know, you lose focus a little bit. I think it's the same thing in a championship. It's the same thing the way you attack races. You know, you go into it with, you know, a somewhat conservative but aggressive approach. You always have to be looking to go forward in the race. So like it. Take the race start, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
If you take it too easy on the race start, you're going to get swallowed up. There's more chances that you're going to get run over by taking it too easy. So, you know, every race start, you don't want to get in an incident, you know, especially if you're leading the championship, you don't want to get in a wreck.
Right.
But if you take it too easy, there's more likelihood that you're going to get involved in something than if you were just attacking and trying to approach it normally by, you know, going for the win. What I mean by that is just having normal aggression. Now, there are points in the race where you go, look, we just don't have the car today. Maybe you're halfway through and you say, let's not try and force something that's not there. We've got a third place car. Let's make sure we finish third. And then you shift your kind of focus to doing that. You don't try and overachieve something with a car that's not capable of it. But, you know, that's normally shift to that point halfway, three quarters of the way through the race.
Is that a decision in your hands, or is that a decision with the team, with the strategist, with the technical guys?
I think with both. You know, your strategy changes. You say, all right, we're not going to do something risky on the strategy. Especially if you're in the championship, you try and not make too many risky calls with strategy. So, you know, they have a role within that. And then the driver has a huge role to understand where he's at. If he doesn't have a car that can challenge for the win, you know, and he's sitting fourth and he's trying to pass people aggressively to get the win when he doesn't have the car underneath him, well, then that's on you as the driver to understand not to do that. So I think it definitely plays into both hands.
Listen, Joseph, we really appreciate you joining us today. Again, congratulations. What do we say? Second win 3 years. That's pretty good.
That's not bad for TO. I'm happy about it.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.